Hey, good
Could
morning.
the go ahead.
Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Siegel, Judge Reyes, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this 13th day of April, 2021. We have two cases on the court's oral calendar this morning. We are hearing them on the Zoom platform. The rules of procedure are the same. Each attorney will have 15 minutes to present his primary argument. Appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes of time for rebuttal argument. Please be mindful of the timekeeping mechanism up in the left-hand corner of the screen. Also, be mindful of any questions the judges may have. They'll indicate that by either using the raise hand symbol, raising their actual hand, or attempting to interrupt you. I would note that we've read the briefs. We're familiar with the facts of the case, both procedural and historical. So we'd ask that you limit your discussion of the facts to those that are necessary to your legal arguments. And we'll give you each a minute or two to state your primary positions before we interrupt you with any questions during the argument. With that, we're ready to hear argument in the first case, which is Saba versus Anderson. Would counsel for appellant introduce himself and proceed with argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. James Teglund for the plaintiff, Roger Saba. Mr. Saba appeals from an order and judgment dismissing with prejudice his complaint, which sought a prescriptive easement. The district court dismissed his complaint despite the fact that Mr. Saba established that he and his predecessors in title for nearly 50 years have crossed the respondent's property, Mr. Anderson, Anderson's property, more than 20,000 times over the course of nearly 50 years. And the parties agree that that use of the Anderson property was non-permissive. Despite Mr. Saba having established that, the district court concluded that Mr. Saba had not established one element of prescriptive easement. The district court went through every element of prescriptive easement and decided Mr. Saba had established any one of the elements successfully. And in that process, the district court developed legal arguments that were not made by Mr. Anderson in his motion for summary judgment. And the district court relied on unsworn, can't even really call it evidence, but statements made during oral argument, or possibly the court believed it saw something at the viewing of the property. But regardless, these factual inferences about the easement area, Mr. Saba was never given an opportunity to rebut those or disagree with them.
Can I interrupt just for a minute here, Mr. Teglund? So let's start with the factor of exclusivity. That was one issue where the district court said that there were no visible markings of the use. And I guess this goes to maybe the hostile factor as well. What has been done to create a fact issue over that, a genuine issue of material fact? Mr. Anderson claims that he never, that the only times he saw this ever, he said something. And so can you help us out and just highlight where you believe the fact issues are there on those
Sure.
elements?
On the issue of exclusivity, Minnesota courts have never said it's like a strict exclusivity requirement. So for example, in the Merrick v. Schluter case, the Minnesota Supreme Court said, quote, "It is not fatal to the right by prescription that the use may have been participated in by the owner of the servient tenement or by owners of adjoining land, end quote. So yes, Mr. Anderson has used a part of this easement area at the same time the Saba family has, but notably, if the court looks at the kind of diagram of these properties, the Saba property is essentially on a dead end here. They're on the north side of this development, so nobody else goes up there. That's in one of the final paragraphs of Mr. Saba's declaration. He's essentially on a dead end of this subdivision. And so the only people up there are Mr. Anderson, the defendant, or Mr. Saba and his predecessors and titles, or the people they're inviting. That's the only people that are up there. That's what he said under oath. So we think at a minimum, there's a fact question. Frankly, when you move for summary judgment, you do so at your own risk, because a summary judgment can be granted against a moving party. I think as a matter of law, Saba has established exclusive use. There's been no evidence presented that anyone else other than Mr. Anderson and the Saba family using this prescriptive area. So Mr. Saba would, of course, argues that he has successfully raised a fact question. Judge Larkin?
Could you tell us how this viewing of the land came about? Did someone request it? Did anybody object to it? Whose idea was it?
Yes, Your Honor. Going off of my recollection, I think it may have come up at oral argument at summary judgment as a possibility. I did get the transcript from that oral argument, so the court does have the transcript available, so it can confirm that or not. But then the court, district court, issued an order saying that it wanted to have a viewing, and so a viewing did occur, that's how the viewing occurred. Myself and Mr. Bear were there. The district court and the district court's law clerk was there, and Mr. Anderson was there, and we just did a viewing of the property, which isn't uncommon in cases like this. But I don't believe it's appropriate, based on the rules and the case law I've cited, for the district court to make inferences about what it's may or may not be seeing, without giving, you know, Mr. Saba here an opportunity to respond.
Did you object to the viewing?
No, absolutely not. And I'm not objecting to the viewing now. I'm objecting. And first, we don't know how. So the court made this conclusion about whether or not there were markings left on the property. And that's what we're objecting to, that inference, because again, I struggle here because I was never given the opportunity to contest this fact. And I think the confusion comes with, since this dispute arose, Mr. Saba has wanted to have the legal process play itself out. So he has stopped using the easement area, doesn't want to create conflict with his neighbor. So the easement area has fallen into disrepair. It's still visible. You can see where it is. It's not in the condition where it was. We have photographs of, it's very clear, tire tracks, gravel, sand. And we just wanted an opportunity to show that.
From where to where were these tire tracks, and where were there? I mean, what exactly, where is the court referring to with visible markings or the lack thereof?
Yes, Your Honor. If the court doesn't have the Goranson Beach plat available to it, I'll just describe the plat generally. It is in the appellant's addendum, but it's in the area marked restricted driveway on block one of the Goranson.
I don't mean to interrupt you again, but I see that the driveway. Is there someplace besides the driveway between Mr. Saba's home or cabin and the driveway? I mean, what, where, because a driveway would just look like a driveway, right?
Yeah, okay. I think I know what you're saying. Yeah, so Mr. Anderson, Mr. Anderson drives into his cabin, the platted easement area continues on north for a bit longer. So I think that's the area where the district court was saying there was no markings. And again, we would agree that the area has fallen into disrepair, but that's not the way it has been traditionally, Your Honor. I think Judge Larkin had another question.
I do. So as I understand it, you don't object to the viewing, you agreed to the viewing. Your complaint on appeal is that the judge made a finding of fact at that viewing, which was a basis for summary judgment.
Correct.
So that implies that there was a disputed issue suggesting that, you know, the judge said, well, I see no signs that it was disturbed. Was there evidence in the record showing that it was disturbed such that there was a fact issue and the district court resolved it on summary judgment?
Well, so first that discussion, specific discussion, never came up at the viewing. The district court's never said, well, I don't see anything here. The district court just said, here's the area. It's the respond in a motion for summary judgment. When you're responding, you need to rebut the evidence that's been put on. That's your job. And the Mr. Saba did that. He said, we use that property 20,000 times for 50 years, nearly 50 years. The argument was never put forth in addition to use of the property, the use also has to leave a physical evidence, and there's no physical evidence. It was made as a passing comment at the close of oral argument. And I said, That's not true. There is physical markings. So as soon as it came up and the way it came up, Mr. Saba said, no, not true. Again, and it was never raised by an affidavit or declaration on behalf of the moving party, Your Honor.
So this issue where Mr. Saba is saying, nope, there's signs of use, that was at oral argument on summary judgment. The judge came up with the idea of let's go out there and take a look. And then after taking a look, the judge said there's no sign of physical use. And that was a basis for the decision.
That's close, but it's not like the judge said, oh, you're saying this, you're Mr. Anderson, you're claiming there's no physical evidence. Mr. Saba, you're claiming there is physical evidence. Let's go look. There's a lot of things that were discussed at oral argument. I tried to explain to the district court on multiple occasions kind of how the property is laid out. And then the district court just said, it would help me in understanding the motions if we went and looked at the property. It was never posed to me in the order or at summary judgment oral argument. I want to get to the bottom of this physical evidence issue. That's never the way that came about.
So, okay, I'm just trying to get a handle on your argument because it sounds like you were agreeable to the judge going out there and looking, but in your mind, the judge wasn't going out there on a fact-finding mission. The judge wanted to just see the property and be able to understand the layout, the arguments in the context of a view of the property. And your complaint here is the judge turned this into some sort of fact-finding mission.
Absolutely.
Without notice to you.
Absolutely. That's my argument, Your Honor.
Because it is almost like, okay, summary judgment is supposed to be based on affidavits, and now we have a judge viewing the property, but no one objected to it. But on the other hand, then that raises the question of what notice did the parties have as to what purpose the viewing served, and is it unfair for the judge to use it for one purpose if it wasn't disclosed to the parties?
That's my argument. And these types of prop viewings are very common in cases such as this. And of course, it helps to understand the context of the arguments. It helps you understand the photographs, the surveys. And it's just tough understanding everything when you don't get to see the property. So that it's very common in cases such as these to do that. And yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, I just want to follow up. You'd mentioned that when the issue came up of whether or not there's any physical evidence of markings or use, that there you had evidence of affidavits or testimony of extensive use. Did I hear you correctly in saying that you also had photographs of what it looked like before the use had stopped pending the litigation?
Absolutely. Okay. And it's actually, ironically enough, it's on those photos are on file with the district court. They were exhibits to Mr. Saba's deposition. And I cite to them in my reply brief. But unfortunately, I think the Court of Appeals has the same photos the district court does. They are not high quality photos. So if this issue had come up earlier, I would have said to the district court, I've got these photographs of this well-worn gravel road, and you can see a car down on near the beach. And the only way that car is getting down there is by crossing the Anderson property. And so we have photographs. Mr. Saba just would like to have the opportunity to present those to the district court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, we'll now hear from counsel for respondent. Sir, would you please introduce yourself for the record and then present your argument?
Thank you, Your Honors. Zenas Baer for the defendant, Roger Anderson. We believe that the court properly ruled on summary judgment to deny a claim of prescriptive easement for a serial trespasser who was put on notice early on in the ownership of the property that he was not welcome on the Anderson property. It is well to remember that a prescriptive easement operates on the fiction of a lost grant. And it's important to understand that the lost grant is from the property owner's standpoint, that person who is going to be deprived of ownership rights or easement rights to property. So the lost grant requires that the person who is being deprived of property or property rights knows that somebody is crossing his property. Anderson has done everything he can to try to prevent his neighbor from trespassing on his land. He did so, and the undisputed testimony was in 1979 and 1980, Anderson confronted Delore Saba, the father of Roger Saba, telling him that his property lines, pointing out where the property lines were, and informing him that he need not come over onto his property. Essentially said, stay off my property. That same conduct took place in 2005, and that's disputed.
Disputed, right?
Yeah, that's
and
disputed
we have to
by
assume
Anderson.
Wait, excuse me just a minute. So don't we have to, we do have to, it's not a question, on summary judgment, take as true the factual allegations, put forward. And so if, we've got here the declaration of Mr. Saba as well as deposition testimony saying that they openly and frequently and hundreds and thousands of times used that area. And so why is that not, why does that not create a factual dispute?
Because it may have been done when Anderson was not aware of what was going on. Anderson is a weekend dweller of his cabin. He isn't there 24/7, 365 days a year to monitor what is going on, but he can see whether or not there is usage of that area in times where there's wet or muddy areas where they might leave ruts. Then he would notice it. And he did make those comments and attempted to prevent the encroachment on his property by his neighbor Saba. And I would point out the 2005 event is disputed by Anderson, but that is, he does not dispute the 2017 event where Mr. Anderson went to the sheriff to find out what he should do, and he was instructed to put a gate across. So the 2005, I understand that Roger Saba does dispute those contact, but he did not dispute the 79 or 80. That was with Mr. Anderson's father, indicating that there was no permission granted to cross onto his property. And from a property owner standpoint, I would just cite the Romans versus Nadler case, which holds for the proposition that the under the circumstances, something more than such occasional uses of land should be required to give rise to prescriptive rights. The trespasser should be required to show by some additional acts that the entry is hostile and under claim of right, and thus run up his flag of hostile claim so as to warn the owner that if he acquiesces, adverse rights will be established against him. And that's what's totally lacking in this case. All that Anderson claims is that he serially trespassed on Anderson's property multiple times, maybe even 20 or 30,000 different times. But that in itself does not create prescriptive rights. Otherwise, you would have, take for instance, in my backyard, I have a tree that's close to the boundary line. If I mow on the right side of the tree, I'm over on a neighbor's property. And if I continuously do that, do I acquire rights to that side of the tree? No, because that is the neighborly thing to do. And
Mr. the Bear?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question for you. So I just want to build upon what Judge Siegel asked in terms of summary judgment motion. So in a summary judgment motion that Anderson brought, we have to view the facts in light most favorable to Mr. Saba, correct?
Yes.
And if there are any disputed facts, we have to view them in light most favorable to Saba, and that is not the time for the district court to engage in fact finding, correct?
I agree with that statement of the law, Judge, yes.
So, and one of the things that the district court said in its decision on motion, on the motion for a summary judgment, is that it concluded that Mr. Saba left no visible marking upon the land. But there is testimony from, there is evidence in the record presented by Mr. Saba stating that they used that land and they used that path over and over and over. And even the testimony that you reference seems to support that, because there's an acknowledgement by Mr. Anderson that Mr. Saba had been using that land. So Did the district court err by that finding, because it, by engaging in fact finding?
I don't believe that there was any improper fact finding by the district court. The district court.
But how? What in the record, when viewing in the light most favorable to Mr. Saba, what evidence in the record is there that there is no there was no visible marking on the land? Because all you had were some rough photographs and diagrams and then testimony. How could the district court conclude that there are no visible markings upon the land?
The visible marking issue was raised at oral argument, that there were no visible markings. And that is precisely why Mr. Tigland requested the court go out and look at the area. And the court went out to look. The court asked whether there's anything else we should look at, and then departed. And
but isn't that fact finding? Isn't that fact finding, which is contrary to a summary judgment motion?
issued an order to visit the property, and I don't believe it was fact finding any more than.
But my question, Mr. Bear, is, isn't that fact finding when you have a statement in the district court's order that there were no visible marking, there was no visible marking upon the land? That sounds like a finding of fact.
I can't disagree with that, Your Honor, that if the court made that finding, I can't disagree with that. But whether or not that fact is material or appropriate, it still does not rise to the issue of whether or not there was any flag flying, any type of, indicia of the usage that was contended to be taking place on this easement area. And so
Mr.
I think
Bear, so the district court relied heavily on this phrase, you know, flying your flag. What would evidence of that be, if you could humor me for a minute?
Sure.
What might that look like in this kind of context with use of a private driveway?
It might be a worn pathway that was obvious, that was a if you go out in the field, if you walk the fields, you can see deer paths that would be like a deer path going from a Saba property onto the Anderson property. And or you'd see tracks from an automobile that would cross over, not down the easement area, because the easement area is an area that is open to the public. That's subject to an easement for the use of the 5 lots, only one of whom was sued in this case. And so the issue there is, what would cause, if you had tracks going directly from the Saba property onto the easement area, that would be an indicia. A pathway would be an indicia. Putting pavers down in a walkway or improving it with stairs, those would all be indicia of flying their flag to show that they are intending and they intend to assert permanent rights to this land, ownership rights to the land. And there was nothing like that in the situation. And if you go back to the Romans versus Nadler case, something more than occasional uses of land should be required to give rise to prescriptive rights. The trespasser should be required to show by some additional acts that the entry is hostile and under claim of right. And in this case, there was no claim that Anderson intended to assert any rights in Anderson's property. All he did was trespass on the property, never asserted any rights to the property. He was just a serial trespasser that went onto the property. And I believe that the issue of the hostility should not even be a question for this court, and the issue about whether or not there was any evidence of encroachment by Anderson or by Saba on Anderson's property is not, factually is not material to the outcome of the case. Summary judgment was appropriate because there was never any acquiescence by Anderson to Saba's conduct of trespassing onto his land. Anderson told Saba's father, stay off my land, in 79 and 80. In 2005, it's disputed, of course, in 2005, and then in 2017. Those are the facts that are undisputed. And anything short of that would be depriving Anderson of property rights just by the mere fact of having a neighbor trespassing on lands. And we are in a state that we like to call
Minnesota Nice. And in the Nadler case, it talks about the neighbors, and it says, and I'll quote, "It is well known fact that many thousands of homeowners have no boundary fences and that adjoining owners occasionally trespass on their neighbors' lands in cutting grass, trimming hedges, and the like. Such harmless trespasses are committed upon the well-founded assumption that ordinarily a neighbor will acquiesce in and consent to them. Such trespasses are not done with any intention of acquiring adverse rights and are acquiesced in by the owner without intending that such rights be established." That is the state of the law. And I think the court, if it looks at the Romans versus Nadler decision, the issue about whether or not there is any visible markings is not a material fact to support the summary judgment motion. It is the fact that there has been no acquiescence or loss of this grant by Mr. Anderson. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear rebuttal argument from appellant's attorney.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start with Mr. Anderson's argument about the whole kind of premise or the underlying theory of these prescriptive easement cases is the lost grant kind of thing, that if the use has been going on for so long, there must have been a lost grant. And then in the Rogers case, Rogers v. Moore, it says the purpose of prescriptive easements has been to encourage the prompt resolution of disputes before evidence is destroyed or relevant events pass out of memory and thereby stabilize long continued property uses, end quote. Nothing in this case is inconsistent with that purpose, the motivation for prescriptive easements or the purpose of prescriptive easements. Mr. Anderson didn't acquire his lake lot until 1979, 10 years after the Saba family had acquired their property. And that's in Anderson's deposition, which is on file with the district court, page 7, lines 11 through 19 of the Anderson deposition. The Saba family was already there for 10 years using that area before he ever came by. There's nothing inconsistent with the lost grant theory of prescriptive easements in this case. I also want to discuss about the Romans case. On page 484 of the Romans case, the Minnesota Supreme Court kind of summarizes how often the potential servient estate was used by the plaintiff or the person seeking a prescriptive easement. And it was used for like ladders, stepping stools, maintenance issues. It was painting. It was used less than 100 times in 43 years. That's page 484. You can do the math. The people seeking prescriptive easement used the property less than 100 times in 43 years. Here we have over 20,000 uses in almost 50 years. These cases aren't even in the same ballpark. So Romans is good law. It's fine law. It's a good case. I cite it myself, but they're just so different. The judge Siegel had a question about flying the flag. What was done to fly the flag? And here we had foot travel, daily foot travel, multiple times a day, travel with vehicles, golf carts, lawn tractors, boats, trailers, propane trucks, thousands and thousands of times over 50 years. Either one of two things is true. Either the district court made an error here, or cases like Moore v. Henriksen, 1968 Minnesota Supreme Court case, Block v. Sexton, 1998 Minnesota Court of Appeals case, Rogers v. Moore, 1999, Minnesota Supreme Court. Americans v. Ryan, 2003, Minnesota Appeals, unpublished case. Either those cases were decided wrong or this district court made an error. Moore, Block, Rogers, Americans are all cases involving, you know, traveling across either a driveway, a road, dirt path, footpath, things like that. And then a party successfully claiming a prescriptive easement based on that use. Here we have the same set of facts. We have somebody using essentially a kind of a something between a dirt path and a gravel road, somewhere in between there. And they use it to get around their property, to access their property over the course of many years. So either the district court made an error here or those four cases are bad law.
Can I ask one quick question? So is there any case law on this notion? Mr. Anderson's argument on, you know, part of this, that there's no fact issue, that every time he observed something, he objected. Now, I know 2005 is disputed, but is it subjective knowledge? Is it, I mean, what are we, if he only visited his property, you know, four times over 30 years and he objected each time, I mean, where does that leave us against, you know, against the 20,000 uses in 50 years?
May I answer the court's question? I see my time has expired.
Yes, you may.
Your Honor, that issue was never briefed, but having briefed similar issues in the past, I know that actual knowledge is not a requirement. And so I was trying to find the case law on my phone here, but I wasn't able to. So the issue wasn't briefed. That's the best answer I can give. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel, for your briefing and arguments. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days. That concludes this hearing.
Thank you.